SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, Breeders' Cup, players, fans, stakeholders, everybody. Good morning, and 3 hours ahead of handicapping and discussion to close out the preview portion, and then it's in the hands of ticket construction and the way races unfold on the racetrack. The immediate conversation, if you were listening to the replay, it'll feel like a continuation of what, I'm really not sure how much of the live conversation with Nick Luck yesterday got through past noon or up to noon, at what point I was informing him that word had come from Dave Greinig that Chad Brown forced to withdraw domestic spending from the turf. And then, of course, hours later, not even hours later, minutes later, 45 minutes or so later, Richard Mandel having to take out United. And you think to yourself, this is brutal, but hopefully that's the end of it. It wasn't. Depends, I guess, on when you went to bed and what you woke up to. The Chad Brown barn, literally its two best chances. He's got plenty of live other horses, but Jack Christopher with a shin, the left front shin that forced him to come out. A mammoth shakeup. How else do you describe it? So that was the overnight development. And as I said to Dave Greinig, boy, the only news now, you figure it could potentially be bad news, and that literally has come to pass. Let's hope that everybody that went out for jogs this morning and nobody did anything silly in the stalls overnight or tonight into Saturday. And obviously, with First Post not coming until, what time does First Post come? First Post coming at 2:55 Eastern, so we probably won't have the final scratches and changes until, by 12:30. Eastern, right? The Breeders' Cup portion of the card, and as I wrote yesterday afternoon, the front end of the card, and as Nick and I kicked around, the front half of the card is really good. The five races leading into the Juvenile Turf Sprint and the rest of the Juvenile Friday Future Star Fiesta. That'd be good, actually, out at Del Mar. Future Star Fiesta. That starts at 5:50 Eastern time. And the Juvenile Turf, 8:30 Eastern tonight, basically prime time for both of these cards. And the Juvenile goes off at 7:50. So clear the deck through about 8:45 tonight. Let me slip in Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And let me give you the lineup. We're about a minute away from diving in. I mean, the Jack Christopher piece is obviously was the top story. There were some other ancillary pieces to kick in from Churchill and Del Mar yesterday, and that included, as Marty McGee mirthfully tweeted, the long national nightmare is over. Yeah. Ricardo Santana Jr. won a race, breaking the schneid. And I don't know if you saw this. Ray Pollock reminded everybody that there was a stretch where Steve Coffin lost 110 straight races. So this is not like some thing that has never happened in the history of, you know, of high-level jockeys. The Asmussen Barn also getting a win yesterday at Churchill. And the one more note about Miguel Mena in a sort of an eerie scenario. The horse that he, one of the horses he was scheduled to ride yesterday, Mahomes Money wins. And Mitch Merle rode. And, of course, there was a moment of silence and a very emotional scene at Churchill. But one thing that was just a little eerie about the whole thing was the alliteration. The owner, Michael Motley, the horse, Mahomes Money, the rider replacing Mitch Miguel Mena, Mitch Merle. It double M, highly prominent. Yesterday at Del Mar, you watch the main track early. We've got, of course, the marathon race, which I don't know how much that tells us. There's a 7 furlong. Not the marathon, that's on Saturday, excuse me. The 6 furlong opener, then there's the 2 7 furlong Calbred stakes, the Golden State races. So we'll have 3 sprints. But certainly, you know, certainly yesterday on the main track, turf seemed to play pretty fairly. But yesterday on the main track, you needed to be close up. So we'll keep an eye on that. Let's get an eye on the lineup today. And in a matter of seconds, we're going to welcome in the great one. Satish Sinan is going to visit. And we'll catch up with Satish. He's looked at the late pick 4. He's excited about the weekend. We haven't talked since before Derby. And James Scully in hour 1 today. We'll get James's plays. Joe Bianca from TDN. Of course, Joe is in our betting companion guide. Jay Priven, top of hour 2 today. We expect to talk some clocker plays from Mike Welch and Gary Young in hour 2. Bobby Shoemaker's got, it looks like, 3 plays, prime plays that he's focused on. Jimmy Ventura and Hammer, they're together, as always, on Breeders' Cup. We'll talk to them together. Marcus Hirsch to follow them. And Nick Tamaro, the last segment of the Breeders' Cup Week Preview. It's always a pleasure to catch up with Satish Sinan. Satish, good morning.
Good morning. Having a hard time hearing you, but can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're good. You sound great.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
You were giving me word. I guess you got word that I'd had this little cardiac issue, and you've had your share.
I've had plenty, and so you know, you just need to take good care of yourself. Don't be like me and pulling the IV out of your arm and then getting out of the hospital yourself.
That was a great, you told me that story. I laughed all night after I talked to you yesterday.
You know, I did it twice. I did it the first time, and believe it or not, the second time I had the 2 stents put in, and the very next day was Sasha's graduating party. So Anne and Shemaine were in Atlanta. That's where I had it. And I told Dr. Gandhi, he was my surgeon both times, I said, listen, you get this shit done because I have to be out of the hospital at 6:30 tomorrow. So I had my plane waiting at Peachtree Airport, downtown Tampa. And I just, in a wheelchair, got out and got the heck out the very next morning. So anyway, I was crazy, but don't be crazy is the lecture here.
Good advice, and I will take it. And I'm sure Tina is going to be just as attentive as Ann has been with you. I saw a picture on the Inspirata website, and you look terrific. You look trim and fabulous.
I'm not that trim, but I'm good. I'm keeping my, you know, I'm a guy of habits, a creature of habits, process. I do the same thing every day. I get up at the same time. I eat the same shit. For breakfast, lunch, dinner, I don't do any crap, and I just work.
So you work amazing, and we'll at some point we got to get an update on the Inspirata project. Today, I want to get some thoughts from you. You looked at the cards, and tomorrow's late pick four. Some very good racing, as always, Satish.
It's good and it's tough. It's good and it's tough, and I did. Last night I spent time just on those four races. I'm going to handicap something. You know, every year I enter the Breeders' Cup competition, so you got to give me a good long shot so that I can get some score on that. But, yeah, in the ninth race, mile is always a tough race, and Europeans are generally tough to beat. But the horse I really do like, I tell you, is number two. I think that's a value, smooth like straight.
Sure.
I don't know how he's training out there, but you know, last four or five races, pretty close. I think he's kind of prime today, and you can't leave three out. Everybody's betting three. I don't know much about it, but you know, Charlie doesn't come here with good horses for fun. But my two picks really is 2, 3, and 6. I like more four set for a win.
Yep.
And I think value is in two. That's what I like.
Cool. But, 2, 3, 6.
You know, yeah, third source blowout has a shot. So in my pick four, 6 is my choice. 2 is my long shot. But I'm going to put all 4, 2, 3, 6, 10 in my pick four. So that's race 9. Race 10... You know, it's a four-horse race, but I think the six, you know, the mare is a tough mare. He's going to be tough to beat. But I think the one that might beat the Tuska today could be the Royal Flag. I like Chad's mare.
Yep.
Training well. I mean, the last race, even though buyers and numbers were not great, I think she's going to be tough. Todd's mare. She's a young filly, but she's got a shot. But I think the race really is between, in my opinion, 2, 6, 8. That's what I'm going to go with also in my pick four. And then, you know, Chad is always tough to beat in these races. Race 11, tough race. Europeans always win this race. But I think that with domestic spending, he's got a shot.
He's had to, Satish, he's had to scratch.
Huh?
He had to scratch domestic spending.
Oh, you got? I don't have the scratches. I'm sorry.
Domestic spending and Nick's United. Mandela and LNJ. The United's out too.
Okay, well, I didn't pick him, but I think the Europeans are going to be tough to beat. But I tell you, the horse I like for long value. I mean, they're betting at the Dermot Wells mare. Dermot.
Sure.
You know, he used to train for me. He very rarely comes. I don't know how old he is. He's probably older than I am, for fuck's sake. I was 74 last week, and Jesus, we're still going strong. So Dermot doesn't come for fun. Very rarely brings a horse to Europe and generally has it all ready and juiced up. So I think that mare, 13, might be tough to beat. 12 is tough. I am going with number 7 for my value. So it's going to be 7, 12, 13 is what I'm betting. Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, you look at that Walton Street. Ran a huge race, last one at Woodmine, came here, won by, it was in hand when that day won. I actually bet her that day. And I think, again, Charlie doesn't come for fun. He's got some very, very good horses, you know.
They've had a great year.
Huh?
See, it's had a great year, the Appleby, everywhere. Everywhere he's gone.
No, everywhere, in Europe and he's gone to Dubai, had a good season. He's running in Hong Kong, running some good races. He flies in and takes the purse and goes back. So I think I like 7 and 12 and 13. Those are my three picks. And then if the last race is, they all talk about the two horses, 4 and 5. I think Hot Rod Charlie's got a shot, so
yep.
I have to go with Price. I'm going to take that horse, but you can't leave 5 horse out. I think Nick's Go. If I had to pick one for just flat, one horse to win, I would go with Nick's Go. But in my pick 4, I'm going with 3, 4, 5. I think these are easy picks.
That's what's funny about Breeders' Cup. You see horses, Satish, that they should be good enough to win. And whether it's sometimes the field size and race flow has stopped them from winning. But I don't disagree. I mean, you've got everybody included in here that makes sense, and you sprinkled in some prices in case to try to make the thing worthwhile.
But how many times we go to the Breeders' Cup and on the Derby day, and we think these are locks, and then you have a 20-1 short and a 30-1
exactly.
Short. This is when they surprise you. But poring over it last night for a couple of hours, I see a couple. The one I picked with some price, they're not 20-30-1, but they're 8-1, 10-1. But I think the classic is got to go through Nick's Go. I mean, that horse is training awesome, and I know, essential quality is good. But I do think that, Doug at home turf is tough to beat. I think trains horses and knows. I think the Delmar track is going to have something to do with it, It's not like Belmont, it's tight track, and
yep.
I think going down that tight track, I think the Europeans are at a disadvantage, and I think the horses that run locally, train locally, are going to, these Europeans are used to wide, turns and big fields and open horses, and this is a pretty damn tight track, and I just think that the locals, if they're good enough, I think they got a shot. So that's. But I'm not in the game every single day. So I'm just look at it a few times a year. But I'm hoping we are on the board.
Well, let me run it down for everybody. This is the late pick 4 that Satish ran down. 2, 3, 6. Maybe with 10 if you want to spread a little, with the 2, 6, maybe with the 8 if you want to go 3 deep, with the 7, 12, 13, with the 3, 4, 5.
That's it.
It's a $36 ticket for
a
buck. That's it. Hit it a few times. And, Satish, I always ask you because, the as much success as Padua enjoyed, the Breeders' Cup, and I suppose Vindication, which is coming up next year on the 20th, it'll be 20 years from Vindication's win. Probably you consider that the best moment or is curling?
No, obviously by that time I was well into racing, and it was a horse that we had many years of drought, and that was the name. That's the reason we chose the name Vindication, and we had just fired Wayne Lucas. There was a lot of turmoil within, and I remember leaving Saratoga and leaving Nadia and Sasha, and I said, you keep bidding on this goddamn horse. And I was actually in a hotel in London when they were bidding. I was on the phone. And that was the reason for it, Vindication, the name itself. And it was a great race, as you know. He won at Del Mar, and then his best race really was at Turfway Park, when he just circled the field and swallowed the field on the outside. And, of course, the win in Chicago was good because he ran the last in 9 and change, which was phenomenal, and it was a longer, but I tell you the win that because we were not expecting it was Cash Run at Gulfstream. She was a speedy filly, as very well bred, eventually. I think we sold it for $7 million, me and John Magner, you know, bidding at each other in those days. So those were the days, Steve. But out of the Breeders' Cup, we won a few. You know, we were only in the game 6-7 years, and we won with Cash Run. We won with, you know, the sprint at Santa Anita with the gelding. And we took him to Dubai and won with Vindication and, of course, on the part of the curling. So, you know, you look back and you look back at the races and how many people been in the race for the time they've been. And our time was really from 2007 to probably 9 years, 8 years, somewhere there. And I think we won, you know, 4 Eclipse Awards and Horse of the Year and 4 or 5 Breeders' Cups and didn't win the Derby. We won every other goddamn thing in the business. So maybe we'll do that.
Well, and
it was good
and the
fun,
mayor's,
Steve, you know.
Well, and you know, one thing that is part of the legacy of Padua, as well. You know, the mayors, there's still mayors and female family members that are producing and producing nice horses.
They're producing nice horses, and they're out there. And I still see the odd runners. I see. I was looking at Hong Kong racing. I see odd runners from Exchange Rate. You know, a heck of a horse. I love that horse. And you still see some legacy of the odd horse running here and there from Yes Is True. And, you know, so we had some great horses. And we, a lot of fun in those days, Steve. You know, I don't regret any piece of it. And, you know, I served on the Breeders' Cup board for a long period of time. But I have to tell you that I look at the racing today and I look at the racing then. And even prior to that, the business hasn't changed. And that's the thing that the industry has to focus on it and really transform the business. I guess I'm disconnected, but I'll...
No, no, you're there. You're there. You're there.
I wish you well.
Satish, thanks so much. Good luck. We'll talk over the weekend. So there it is, Satish Sinan, and if you want to play the full ticket, what has he got, 4x3x3x3, but 2, 3, 6, 10 if you want to include it, 2, 6, 8 if you want to include the 8 in the Distaff, 7, 12, 13 in the mile, and 3, 4, 5 in the classic, Satish Sinan. So just always a treat. Learned so much, and it was so valuable to the show for many years, the Our Industry segments that taught us a lot and taught everybody a lot. There wasn't any question you couldn't ask Satish and get a and get a unvarnished answer. James Scully standing by. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Happy Breeders' Cup weekend.
Thanks. And
want to say, you know, we weren't on last Friday. You know, congratulations on, you know, the award. But I'm sorry you couldn't make it to Del Mar. But happy you're feeling better. And always, it's good to hear your voice.
Wow, very kind. And I appreciate it. James, you're focused in on the weekend, and I did see you had some releases. You laid out your Friday selections. Run those down real quick. I want to focus on Saturday, but I saw on Facebook you laid out your top picks in the 5 races today.
Yeah, in my, you know, in the juvenile turf sprint, Averly Jane, you know, I think most likely winner, but I do like that Virginous. That's a long shot pick. I'll be using her in my bets. I went with Echo Zulu in the juvenile fillies turf. In the juvenile fillies turf, I'm going to play the 13 and 11. Mise en Somme and Haughty. You know, I thought that Command Performance, Corniche, you know, or both are probably the most likely winners, but I am going to use Oviat Class. He might not be 20-1. Seems like a lot of people are discussing him as a live long shot potentially, but he has something going for him off that last race. I thought, and he could factor in. You know, one of my strategies, I'm always looking for these multi-race plays in these Breeders' Cup sequences. But if I like a long shot, and, you know, a lot of times I'll be looking at the vertical exotics because even if it runs second or third, opportunity to cash a good ticket. And then in the juvenile turf, I got a long shot picked on top there, Gonton. Really a horse, I think, sneaky in there for Aiden O'Brien, Rhino Moore, 12-1 on the morning line, going to get a little bit of a price. I think that he's a perfect example of a horse where I'll be playing exactas and trifectas with him.
Yeah, both Kevin, Kev Humphreys and I were, and I think, you know, obviously you're going to respect modern games in here.
Yeah.
For Appleby.
Yeah, he's the horse to beat. I think Albar, you know, Albar and the 14 Dubawi Legend, I thought both those horses. Now, obviously, I'm you know, I've done some, watched some replays and looking at these form lines and stuff, but I'm colleague with Kelly Riley. She puts out on BrisNet.com a international scouting report. It's the most in-depth coverage of these Euros running in the Breeders' Cup anywhere out there. I've spoken to her multiple times for over an hour at a time this week, and I've just picked her brain. I always do because I get so much good insight on these international runners from Ms. Riley. So I thought I'd give her a little tout, and, sure. You know, that's a little bit of my thinking on those horses.
Well, and I looked through it myself on Wednesday. I think it's 45 pages worth of reading from Kelly.
And she's listing them in her order of preference. You know, some of the horses she lists like second or third, or some of the horses, you know, that I'm going to appreciate using because I think they offer good value.
Let's turn to Saturday, James, and walk through. Just start with the Philly Mare Sprint and just walk through your approach on the day.
You know, it could be a good race just to, perhaps to watch. You know, I thought Bella Sophia had the best chance of beating her. I'm not too keen on CC, so, you know, Gamine to me, I'm not sure she's as sharp as she was last ball, but she'd probably still be good enough as lone speed in there in the Philly Mare turf. Turning to the turf sprint, now that's a really dynamite betting race, I thought. My opinion in there, my top pick in there is number 2, Emirata Anna. And this is a horse, a 5-year-old gelding. You know, he was running in Group 1 races as a 2-year-old. He went terribly off form after his juvenile season. You know, was a little bit lightly raced a couple of years. But this year he turned things around this summer for Kevin Ryan, who won the Breeders' Cup last year with Glass Slippers, Emirata Anna's stablemate. And he ran a really big race in an allowance in late July at Hamilton Park. Off of that race, they threw him in the Group 1 Nunthorpe, and he ran second that day. A good second. You know, Winter Power was impressive winner, I thought, that afternoon. Golden Powell was in that field. And then he came back in the Betfair Sprint Cup and beat arguably the divisional leader in the sprint division in Europe, the best sprinter over there, Starman, by a head. This horse has gotten back in form. He's won around a left-handed turn, and I think he has some positional speed. He's not a one-run closer. He can work out a trip in mid-pack. He's got a big chance. Kevin Ryan himself even said that he thought that Emirata Anna would be tailor-suited to the Del Mar course. So I'm giving him an edge in there. I do respect the chances of a gear jockey for Rusty Arnold. He's another horse really improved since cutting back to a turf sprint. You know, I'll mention some others from an exotic perspective. Lieutenant Dan, I thought Caravelle was a little bit interesting in there. Could, like, work out a trip for part. And even Kamari, I didn't really talk about her in my preview of the race I wrote earlier this week. But the more I take a look at her, the more I'm like, hey, I mean, if she hits the board in there, I won't be too surprised. So thoughts on the turf sprint.
I hear you. I'm the same way with Kamari. Dirt Mile.
Dirt Mile, you know, it's a little bit, this this Ginobili is a little bit of a wild card in there. I mean, he looks like a Del Mar specialist. He's got real good speed. He's real sharp right now. He's going to take it. The life is good. I took a little bit of look at Eight Rings, and Silver State. Definitely, I thought, has a chance if he can get back into form when he was in top form earlier this season for Steve Asmussen. But, it's not one of my favorite betting races on the afternoon from a betting perspective, Steve.
Yeah, I agree.
Turning to Philly Mare Turf, this is a race where, I think that Love is going to take some beating in there. I mean, she was going to run in the arc. She had to miss the race. He redirects her here. I've seen where some people have speculated, why wouldn't she be in the turf? You know, O'Brien never does what anybody expects him to do with these horses, and they win when he makes these moves. I think he wanted to run his other horses, even though they're long shots. I think he wanted to run them in the turf, and he wants her to go out a winner in this spot. And I expect her to run her race with Ryan Moore. I also, obviously, Adaria, merits respect, but I'm going to be trying to beat her for the win, from that tough outside post. I thought Only Loves You, Warlike Goddess, even Rogier, you can make the case for if you're playing like Vertical Exotic, I wouldn't be shocked to see it win. But I'm going to give you a long shot, Steve, that I'm going to be trifecta key boxing. She might be a year away from hitting her best form, but number 10, Ocean Road, is eligible to move forward in her second start back from a layoff for Hugo Palmer in here. This is a filly that was really well met, well thought of early in the year. She ran sixth in the Epsom Oaks and then had to take some time off. She would have been preceding, Tiona and other Group 1 winners were behind her in that race, and she would have been proceeding along the exact same path that they were. She needed that race last time, didn't have the best of trips, really finished full of run, running third in that Group 3. She's a 20-to-1 shot, maybe 50-to-1 long shot that could really spice things up, and she's a long shot I'll be using in the Philly and Mare Turf and tries and superfectas.
No, I'm glad you brought her up. She hasn't gotten much attention this week. Ocean Road, the 10, with O'Shane Murphy.
O'Shane Murphy, our leading champion rider in England. Yeah, so he's a kid that may start winning Breeders' Cup races in the years to come.
No doubt.
Turning to the sprint, it's tough for me to go against Jackie's Warrior. I read the betting guide. Nick Tamro picked Aloha West second. Thanks a lot, because that's what I sort of I was sort of thinking about doing a Saver 5. Two, but really betting a big exact at 2.5 in there. I do think Aloha West is going to run a big race. I think he's primed off of that last race at Keeneland. Trained well. It looks like he's trained well at Del Mar in preparation, and he's coming on for Wayne Catalano. But he's just not good enough yet to beat Jackie's Warrior. I think he's the class of the field, and that's the way I got the sprint 2.5 straight.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Aloha West 8-to-1. Special Reserve, I think, needs some attention. And then the fourth one I'm using is CZ Rocket, who'll pick up some pieces late.
I mean, Special Reserve, just fantastic what Maker has done. And I just thought that was just an enormous race at Keeneland. Aloha West had every shot at him, and he dug in like as game gets. Turning my attention to the Breeders' Cup Mile, I'm going with Space Blues. I think he's the class of the field. I don't think he has to be too far back in the early going, so he's eligible to go to good ground-saving trip. Can handle, has shown ability to handle traffic in the past. Has, a number of things going for him. Two horses I'll be using with Space Blues are American runners. Obviously, Mo Forza, I think, is capable of running well. But I'm going to use In Love. I made a case for him in the Keeneland Turf Mile that day. I like horses in improving form, stepping up in class off of a Grade 1 race. I think he fits in this spot. He's a horse that could hit the board, in my opinion. Eligible to definitely be higher than 8-to-1, even, I thought. I look at a horse like Mother Earth. It's 8-to-1. She's going to be short odds and In Love. So, those are three. That's the way I was looking at it. Obviously Space Blues and Mo Forza aren't going to get a lot of value in that spot if they come in. But that's just the way the race plays, I think. I've got another long shot. I will mention Pearls Galore, number 12 on the outside. That's a filly that has something going for her as well. She could be one to use if you're playing the vertical exotics in there and want a price source.
All right.
And then the distaff, I think Letruska, is going to catch a lot of pressure. I think really a little bit of the key to the race is how Private Mission breaks. I think she's going to break running from the rail and be out there looking to, steal it like wire to wire on the front end. Going to catch some heat. I think the race is going to set up beautifully for Royal Flag. She's going to have to keep advancing off of her last three starts, but those last three starts are an improvement from her prior form. I think she's just getting the right setup in these races. I think it's interesting. It might not necessarily play that way, but I thought both the Distaff and Classic set up to have like a really solid pace, contested pace. And, I think that's going to benefit, stalker late runner types. And I like Royal Flag. She rates the edge in the distaff for me, Steve. Malathat will be a mare that I look to work in on some multi-race tickets. And I'll even use Dunbar Road a little bit in that same vein as well.
A lot of us are on the same page with Royal Flag, it seems. I hope not too many of us.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then turning to the Breeders' Cup Turf, I like number 12, Tiona. I like this 3-year-old filly. I think she's really peaking coming into this race. Like I mentioned, they threw her in the Epsom Oaks this summer off of a third in a Group 3 when she went off 12-1 in that 14-horse field. Got bet that day. Couldn't handle the bog, like more than half the runners in there probably. And then really two sharp efforts, I think, in preparation. Beating Snowfall last time in that Group 1 in France. And I'm going to give her the edge. My issue with Tarnawa a little bit is just that she had a more smooth like path into the race. Like I thought that Laprida Opera, she wasn't all out in that race, and I'm just a little bit worried about that Arc de Triomphe. She was reportedly just knocked out, exhausted, and there was some concern after it that the race had taken too much out. Now she bounced back, and Dermot Weld has really praised her constitution and everything, and says she's 100%. But I don't know. I'm just a little bit worried about that effort taking something out of her. The other horses I'll look to working on some tickets. I like the 9 Sisfahan a little bit. I think this is a 3-year-old colt, has something going for him. Even Yabir, number 10 for Charlie Appleby. Did you see these Charlie Appleby comments about Walton Street? I mean, it blew me out of the water. He basically said the horse was overmatched in this race. I mean, he's 8-1 on the morning line. I don't know. That was weird. But that's the way I see it. I got it. I got the Tiona on top, and like I said, I like a bunch of those Euros on the outside, the 9, 10, 12, and even the 13 will be a horse. I'll work on some pick 4, pick 5 tickets, Steve.
And the Classic.
The Classic, I picked it Essential Quality Hot Rod Charlie, and I'm just going to start off with Hot Rod Charlie. I think that he is freaking dynamite right now. I think he's going really good. I think he's poised to run a big race. I think drawing post 3 was the absolute worst thing that could happen to him, because I know a lot of his supporters are going to tell you that, hey, he can be on or just off the pace, but I think they wanted to be sitting up close from an outside spot. I think drawing post 3 puts him in this like gun runner, ghost zapper mode where, he's adding blinkers. He's got all the speed in the world if he has to. And I think they're just going to go out there and try to wire him. And I do think he's going to catch pressure from Nick Goh, Medina Spare potentially, Art Collector and others. And I think the race is just going to set up perfectly for Essential Quality. I think that his odds aren't going to be too short, and he's going to be my biggest bet of the Breeders' Cup. I think if they ran this race 5 times, Essential Quality would win 4 of them, because he's going to get the right setup. His last work was one of his best works ever. He is just poised to run big in his career finale, in my opinion. So I love Essential Quality, and I'll play him over Hot Rod Charlie and even I'll use your long shot in there, Del Mar Specialist, Tripoli underneath of Essential Quality as well.
Nice. I you and I are on very similar thought process here in this in the classic. James, best of luck, and I appreciate it. We'll do some recapping next week.
Sounds good, Steve. You have best of luck to you this weekend.
Thanks to James as well, of course, for the contribution to the Betting Companion. And if you haven't been yet, James did the turf sprint and the distaff, and was one of the big keys to the positive ROI from last year. So was Joe Bianca of Thoroughbred Daily News. He joins us now. Joe, good morning.
Steve, good to talk to you, man. How's it going?
All right. Ready for kickoff today. And you know, it's funny today with the juvenile races, the first five races, I've made this point, you know, the card itself is just really attractive. It, you know, sometimes you kind of wade through the early part of day one of Breeders' Cup, but I'm intrigued by the front half of the card, and then obviously tomorrow the main event should be terrific. Some overview thoughts from you going into this weekend, first of all?
I mean, overall, I think the turf races today are a little bit more interesting. I thought it was a little disappointing that we only had six horses in the juvenile fillies, and now we have five in the Filly and Mare sprint. You know, the scratch of Jack Christopher is a little bit of a bummer today, although I think it makes the juvenile a more interesting betting race because I thought he was going to be pretty tough in there. So it's overall today, I disagree. I'm going to take it a little bit lightly today, and tomorrow probably fire away. But I think it's mainly, you know, as usual, it's about what kind of heavy favorites you think you can beat. And yeah, I think there are a couple of vulnerable ones. You know, I think, you know, Latruska is as admirable a horse as she is. I just think on paper she's not any faster than most of those horses. On the other hand, you have a horse like Jackie's Warrior, who I feel like is going to have to fall down to lose that race. So, yeah, I think there are a couple of vulnerable chalks. The turf races tomorrow also are absolutely tremendous. That was also one of my takeaways. The Filly and Mare turf and the turf, I think, are both really, really fun races. The turf lost a little bit of steam with domestic spending coming out, but still, great, great day of turf racing, I think.
Joe, before we talk some specific opinions, I'll ask you the same thing I asked Dave Granick. How concerned should, you know, Breeders' Cup as a property, as an event, how concerned should they be that you've got, you know, now a five horse field in the Filly and Mare sprint, a six horse field in the juvenile fillies, you know, the dirt races, at least on paper, other than the distaff and the classic, don't seem, you know, particularly competitive. That doesn't mean that each of the odds-on type favorites are going to win, but it's pretty clear that if it wasn't for the turf lineup and international participation, this thing wouldn't be that special.
I agree, and I don't know that it's necessarily anything the Breeders' Cup is doing or has done wrong. I think it's the kind of the nature of the beast now, and the way things are trending in racing. I remember I was lamenting earlier this summer when we had the Coaching Club American Oaks, and there were four horses in the race. Like, it's a $500,000 age restricted Grade One at Saratoga, and you couldn't get more than four horses to show up just because everybody was so scared of Malathot, I guess, and lo and behold, Malathot lost. So, I don't know. That just seems to be the trend, the way things are going, that owners don't want to run their horses if they feel like there's a big favorite that they can't beat. And it drives me a little crazy because, you know, second and third in these races still pay really well. And, I don't get it. You know, in the Filly and Mare sprint, obviously Gamine's going to be tough, but, you know, five horses, there's got to be some people out there kicking themselves that they didn't put up the money and, you know, at least try to get second or third in a million-dollar race. Because, yeah, I mean, and obviously if you're a filly, too, if you have a filly or mare, it really looks good on the breeding side, on the breeding page to get black type. Like, you don't necessarily have to win these races. If you get second or third in a Breeders' Cup race, it doesn't say on the pedigree page that there were five horses in the race. It says you have a Breeders' Cup placing, and I don't get it. I don't think it's anything the Breeders' Cup's done wrong. I think it's just the way that owners have gotten more and more conservative, and frankly, I think a little bit cowardly sometimes when it comes to these big races.
It is surprising, and I was surprised. The Greg Foley and Neil Pessin and their connection, the connections, the teams stayed away. And granted, you know, you go to the West Coast and so forth. It's not as if Gamine looks as imposing as she did, you know, last year going into this. I mean, is she the horse to beat? Yes. Is she going to be one of the shortest prices of the weekend? Yes. I haven't put my Saturday tickets together yet to start that, you know, that there's a middle pick four that starts with the fourth. And of course it's the fourth leg of the first pick five. I'm not convinced. And I'll tell you who, you know, Bella Sophia seemed like the, you know, the horse, you know, 2-3 weeks out, you know, it felt like she was the horse that was the most interesting. Although, you know, historically, the tendency to get excited about a 3-year-old filly in this race rarely, you know, for years, right? It took forever to get a 3-year-old filly to win this race. By the way, the other day, the one I couldn't think of, Unique Bella, her name just popped in my head. Remember, we were all falling over ourselves. In fact, I think it was at Del Mar. The Unique Bella is going to be the 3-year-old to break the schneid, and she was awful. It was a weird hoodoo that 3-year-old fillies couldn't win this race. But anyway, the horse that I'm going to use very prominently is actually Edgeway.
Me too.
Doesn't she look like a beach ball in here?
Yeah, no, totally. And like, this is, you know, that's the only reason I would bet that race, because I was, you know, the thing with the juvenile fillies too is, you know, I think that Echo Zulu is a little vulnerable, but it's hard to get excited about trying to beat a favorite when your alternatives are going to be 2-1 and 5-2 because it's such a short field. But yeah, that's the only reason I would bet the filly Mare Sprint. Edgeway looks like, you know, she could sit that good trip if Bella Sophia and Gamine go at it. Obviously, CeCe would sit a similar trip. But, yeah, that's the only reason I would bet that race, because she still is probably going to be 7 or 8-1 in a five-horse field. But, yeah, overall, it's just, you know, even if you think the favorite is vulnerable in these short fields, you're generally just not going to get value even if you're able to beat them. Edgeway might be the outlier there.
Well, amazing considering, you know, it's a quintet. You know what? Using that as a jumping point, kind of walk through the Saturday action, Joe, and you know, stop wherever you are particularly excited about a choice or a long shot to tinker with.
Yep. I mean, the turf sprint, I think the Euros are probably, one of the Euros is probably going to win. I like A Case of You. 8-1 morning line. I don't know if I'm quite going to get that price on him. I just think he's kind of the right horse at the right time. Is really getting better, and you know, is coming off that big win in the Prix de la Bay. You know, Golden Pal. I wouldn't be surprised if he just popped out to the lead and didn't stop. But I think he's one of those horses who's going to get bet based on reputation, and I don't know that he's any faster than the Europeans in there. So I think that's a fairly interesting race, although. Yeah, I prefer the turf sprint when it's 5.5. I just feel like it's more of a real race. You know, the 5 furlongs, I think, is just such a mad dash that, you know, there's a lot of variables in there. Dirt mile, is one of those races where I'm not going to try to get too cute. I feel like either Life is Good is going to go out to the front and win off by 6 or 7 lengths, or he's going to get fried on the lead and Silver State's going to come run them down. Those are the only two realistic winners I see in that race. To me, the best race on the card, and maybe the best race for the whole weekend, is the Filly Mare Turf. I mean, just an absolute war. You know, Euros, Warlike Goddess, who's been very good this year. You got Love, Rougier, who won the Prix de l'Opéra. You got Love's Only You for Japan, a really, really realistic chance for Japan. Obviously, the returning champion and Audaria. I mean, just what an absolutely great field. I think that to me is one of the most exciting races of the weekend. I think there's a lot of ways you can go. And just from a fan standpoint, I think there's, you get that clash of continents that the Breeders' Cup is usually known for, you know, Japan and Europe and America. Like I said, the sprint, I can't really see past Jackie's Warrior. I just think he's better than those horses. I don't really have a strong opinion about the mile. I would like to go Price Hunting in there, but I don't know. Space Blues looks pretty legitimate to me. I think Mo Forza is the best chance for the U.S. Blowout maybe could get loose in there and forget to stop. And then we got the Distaff is, to me, the most intriguing race from a fan standpoint. And from a betting standpoint, I like it, too. Like I said, Latruska earlier is a very, very admirable horse. She's had a great campaign. I honestly would love, as a fan, to see her win Horse of the Year just because Faso Gutierrez has done such a great job with her and run her all over the place. But on paper, I think she's supposed to have a lot of pace pressure from Private Mission and Horologist and maybe a little bit of She Dares the Devil. I like Royal Flag in there. It's the same kind of thing with A Case of You. I just feel like she's getting good at the right time. I know with the sheets, she ran that big race in the Beldame, and you know if she can run back to that, she's probably going to be pretty tough. I like that she showed a little bit more speed last time. I think she's going to have to lay close. She's kind of a one-run plotter sometimes, and I think that's probably not going to get it done here, even if there's a fast pace. So I'm hoping Rosario can keep her a little bit close, but 6, 7, 8 to 1, I think is totally fair value on her. In the turf, I was all about the Euros anyway, and especially that way now with domestic spending coming out. I'm interested a little bit in Sisvahan, the horse is coming from Germany. I like the way the German form has held up in big races before. You know, he was second to Torquedor Tasso, came back to win the Arc. You know, last year In Swoop was second in the Arc. He's probably a little bit slower than the main contenders, but I think he's getting better, and he's the only horse that I think is really interesting at a price. Although I think Broom could get a piece too. He might get a little forgotten. Doesn't hurt to have Frankie on. He's run some races there competitive. He's a Group One winner this year. Another great race. Tarnawa drawing outside made things a little spicier, although. You know, she's a one-run closer, so maybe she'll be able to drop over. I would like Sisvahan a little bit more, honestly, if this was at Churchill or Keeneland, because I just feel like those German horses do better when the turf is a little bit deeper. I don't know that he's going to adapt as well to that firm, really firm, short grass at Del Mar, but I think he's the most interesting price possibility in there, and it'll just be great to see Tarnawa, who's really a bona fide superstar filly. She's just a blast to watch. You know, dances every dance, runs great against males, being second in the Arc last time. And then the Classic, listen, there's a lot of years where I kind of have to hype myself up for the Classic artificially because it's like, you know, it's a $6 million race, it's the big closer in the Breeders' Cup weekend, but there's just nobody I'm really that excited about watching. That is not the case this year. I'm sure, I feel like you probably agree that this is actually a really, really intriguing Classic, and it's great when, you know, Horse of the Year is up for grabs because that makes it really feel kind of like the Super Bowl or like a real year-end championship race when Horse of the Year is still to be determined. And I got to be against Nick's Go. You know, I've been saying it all year that, you know, going 10 furlongs with pace pressure, you know, I don't think anybody's going to be able to run with him early, but I think they'll be close enough that he'll have to go too fast going 10 furlongs. I'm a little bit interested in Max Player. I was saying on the show yesterday that I wish there was like a Uriah St. Louis bomb in this race because I would probably be all over that horse with, you know, the way that the race might collapse in the end. And so I landed on Max Player, who I think is, you know, has really gotten good the second half of the year. He's interesting because he's gotten better as he's shown more speed. But I think this time he's probably going to have to revert back to that one-run style. And if it totally melts down, maybe Express Train could shock people at 20 to 30 to 1. But, you know, overall, that and the Classic, I think, from a fan standpoint, are just so intriguing. And so much will depend on the way the races run and the way the jockeys decide to, you know, what their strategies are. And those two races, I just think, you know, are really must-watch viewing. And, you know, between that and the two major turf races on Saturday, I think you can't really ask for much more.
No, I agree. And a couple of quick points on the late double. The horse that I was going to use anyway, and now under, you know, one of those project Sunday's headlines scenario, and a horse that really is not getting attention is Rock Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And how odd or unusual would it be? What would you say to yourself if tonight, Joe? I don't know if you're the editor tonight, putting together the Sunday or Saturday for Sunday for TDN. But you know, when it comes to write the headline for the turf, how crazy a headline would be? Chad wins anyway.
Yeah. Well, and in the Turf Classic, he ran 1-2 at 15-1 and 14-1. So he sometimes is able to like jump up and win these big races with horses that you don't really expect. And yeah, I mean that race, yeah, you know, I think the waters get so much deeper here. And I thought he was benefited in that race by Gaffoe moving so early. So that's the only reason that I don't love him in here, just because I felt like that race kind of fell apart for him late, and this is a much tougher field. But yeah, drawing the rail, and like I said, I think there's going to be a fast pace in there with Acclimate and Tribuvan Dorton next door to each other in the gate. I just think there has to be a fast pace, and yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he came calling as well.
Yeah, I'm definitely using him. Javier Castellano riding much better. Javi's got his mojo back. And then mm-hmm. in the classic, the horse that that I'll bring up as a ground saver that can, you know, that can move at will. I mean, essentially getting the same trip that he got in the Pacific Classic, except with Irad instead of with Tiago Pereira. Tripoli to me is the obvious value into this. And you know, from a fig perspective, that effort at Santa Anita is not as bad as it looks, and it may be putting people off, but you know, from a sheep perspective, from Thoroughgraph, he paired up with his Pacific Classic, and now comes back down to Del Mar and adds Arad Ortiz. He's got the pace. He's going to save all the ground. I can envision an inside outside trip for Tripoli, and I don't know if he can win, but if I'm looking for 14-16-1 underneath one of the obvious players, I'm picking Essential Quality, he's the price for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I've been beaten so many times by these John Sadler Hironas horses at Del Mar, like that's over and over again in the Pacific Classic and a lot of other big races. Yeah, he'll definitely be on my tickets at least underneath. And I agree on Essential Quality. I think, you know, it'd be fitting if he won Horse of the Year off of kind of a, you know, just a sit and make one run type race, because one of the things I like about him is that he's so tractable. He's just so versatile, and it, you know, doesn't matter what the pace scenario is, slow pace, fast pace, stalking, closing, you know, up on the lead or close to it. That's one of the things I really like about him is, you know, he just adapts to whatever is put in front of him and finds a way to win. You know, I think he got a little bit unlucky in the Derby, otherwise he still might be undefeated. And yeah, yep. I think it would be fitting for him to just work out that perfect trip because he's so rateable and win Horse of the Year off of it.
And he does seem like, you know, a horse that has actually added to his repertoire since Travers. It feels like watching him, whether it's the videos that KK has put up, Kevin Kirstein, or you know, any of the visuals, it seems like he's added a dimension with, you know, the added maturity, and that's, you know, that's what you want from your good 3-year-olds. And of course he was a good 2-year-old, so feels like he's the centerpiece in there. And the race goes through Brad Cox one way or the other. That's the bottom mm-hmm. line, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Hot Rod Charlie's getting a little bit forgotten about, you know, just with the two Brad Cox horses. I just wonder if he's going to be too close to Nick's Go early to be able to really, you know, kick on late. I thought, you know, he ran the best losing race of anybody this year, and when he was second in the Belmont, I thought there was I thought there was a pretty damn good performance in the Pennsylvania Derby, too. We got a 111 buyer for that race.
Yep.
So I wonder if he might get lost a little bit, end up like 5 or 6 to 1. But, yeah, I think the race probably sets up for someone like a Essential Quality or a Max Player.
Joe Bianca, everybody from the Thoroughbred Daily News. Joe, give everybody the 411 on the writer's room.
Yep. So we record every Wednesday. We got a big Breeders' Cup preview show out right now. We go through all 14 races, me, John Green, and Bill Finley. So yeah, every Wednesday it comes out, every Wednesday night. We have a great time with it. We have great guests. We got a growing sponsorship list, and we're really excited and really proud of it. So go check out that Breeders' Cup preview show. If you're not Breeders' Cupped out by now, go check it out. There's a lot of good insights there. Every Wednesday the writer's room.
And of course, Joe giving us the Juvenile Turf double in the Betting Companion as well. And Joe was positive ROI from last year. And Joe, thanks for that as well. And it's great to connect. And at some point, we'll see you soon, right?
Absolutely, man. Always good to talk to you.
Joe Bianca, everybody. Follow Joe on Twitter as well. JBianca, TDN, and search Twitter for his secret account.
Don't listen to Steve. This is becoming a tradition now, by the way, every time I come on.
Well, because and the thing is, you don't drop any clues. It's very tough. I mean, other than being a long-suffering Jets fan, that's the only clue we can provide.
that's my ove. That's the one thing about me that sustains through all.
That sustains every Jets fan is long suffering. Yep. It's a collective. Joe Bianca, everybody, who's one of the absolute stars at the Thoroughbred Daily News. We'll get into hour two here. We're going to take just one break at the bottom today, and so two halves of the weekend preview edition of At the Races, and Jay Pridman, who was they had Jay on the go yesterday morning. Jay and Dave Grenig and all the correspondents as the news. Jay, the news continued as I was going to bed. Good morning.
Yes, welcome to the Breeders' Scratch 2020.
Hey now, crazy. Did we lose? I thought I'd lost you for a second. No, and thanks for the heads up. And in fact, we surprised Nick Luck on the air yesterday with the domestic spending news.
Okay, good. Sorry to. Yeah, it was a crazy morning with domestic spending in United, and you referenced the Jack Christopher news last night, adding to a week where, it's the end of a long year, and these horses have been trained to the minute, and they're under, tremendous scrutiny, and the combination of that is, resulting in situations like this. I mean, in the specific cases of like United and domestic spending and Jack Christopher, they had situations that their trainers were just like, they knew. Like, it wasn't like they needed a vet to tell them, don't do this. So there was no option based on what they were finding on those horses.
Mm. Now, we'll talk about the ramifications, and certainly, even though, you're not covering the juvenile per se, this is one of the key, 2-year-old events leading to the road to the Derby. It's a points race and all that. So, it's one of the races that in the postscript, in the aftermath of Breeders' Cup, you certainly take a big look at. And, it is notable, Jay. That's one story. I have seen people, hint at it, and you've brought it up along the way covering the Classic. The way in which Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality, arrive at this juncture as major players. And I can't think of too many glaring Breeders' Cup juveniles from the year before that had that storyline.
No, it's been a real tribute to those horses that, Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie were 1-2 in the juvenile last year, and they're two of the big players, obviously, in the Classic tomorrow. So it's really nice to see that. And they've held their form all year. They just kept right on going. And I think this is an exceptional crop of three-year-olds. You know, when you consider Jackie's Warrior and Life is Good are going to be favored in their respective races against older horses as well.
And I'm glad you folded them in. I mean, the tendency is to focus on the route-going main track three-year-olds, but, Jackie's Warriors crafted this, outstanding season, and there's more, obviously. There's ones that'll keep coming back, from the Triple Crown season and the summer campaigns that were put away. Midnight Bourbon, you think of, for instance, It is funny how every year it's the same refrain. These three-year-olds. Those catcalls, they started to dissipate when these horses started throwing down 107, 108, 110 buyers.
Yeah, I mean, every year is different. This year happened to be an above average group. There's some years where they're not.
Talk, Jay, go ahead and let's talk about the Classic, because it's a really fun, interesting group with a spirited pace scenario. And as everybody came together and horses arrived and everything you watched and have learned throughout the year, what's your scenario when they spring the latch tomorrow?
Well, I mean, Nick's Go is obviously going to the lead, but I think there'll be horses trying to be at least within hailing distance of him, like Medina Spirit. Max Player obviously wants to be put into the race. That was the strategy they used last time, and it paid off. And Art Collector likes to be forwardly placed. I don't think they're as fast as Nick's Go, but I think you'll get a legitimate pace, and then it'll be a matter of if Nick's Go can see out the mile and a quarter. This will be the first time he's had to try and do that. He's obviously been brilliant up to a mile and an eighth, and he's won seven straight two-turn dirt races. So that's a pretty good record coming into this. But just, as we were just talking earlier, I think this is an exceptional crop of three-year-olds, and I think both Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality are good enough to beat Nick's Go, and they're going to be better prices. They're proven at the distance. And they've both looked fantastic this week in terms of their training, as has Nick's Go. But Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie have really settled in well and have made a great impression. It's kind of disappointing that Essential Quality, this is going to be his last race, because he looks terrific, and he looks like the kind of horse who would be a sensational four-year-old. So they're obviously going to pull out all stops tomorrow with him. But I like those two best. I think Hot Rod Charlie and Essential Quality are the top ones in here.
You referenced Medina Spirit, who draws just outside, and with Max Player to his outside. You wrote a very fair and even-handed piece about Bob Baffert, who comes into this obviously under the added scrutiny, but more importantly, frankly, with a lot of nice chances. Gamine, is the standout from a short price, but he's managed to bring any number of horses up into the weekend, including in today's juvenile. Talk a little bit about Medina and your conversation with Bob and what you were putting across with that conversation.
Well, I just wanted to put into perspective, the totality of the situation. I think there's been some shaded reporting regarding him. Let's go back to, for instance, the scopolamine situation, which the CHRB completely mishandled by doing it under the cover of darkness. But I think the way it's been perceived is that there was a base on balls given there for one specific trainer, when in fact there were seven horses from five barns that all had tested positive then. And that has not been the narrative. So I just wanted things like that to be in there. And the overriding reason I wanted to write it was because he was under tremendous scrutiny in terms of whether he was even going to be able to participate in this Breeders' Cup. And based on the rules that the Breeders' Cup has published, he is not in violation of any of them from a medication standpoint. So to me, that's what you need to go on. The conduct detrimental to racing thing is a very nebulous and, I think, dangerous thing to go down, because it's kind of a beauty or ugly in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, what's worse, going on having what's happened with him and not in violation of the specifics of the rules as published. And now, if you want to change the rules, then we'll talk again. But as of right now, he's not in violation of them. It doesn't excuse, in my mind, what happened at the Derby regarding the medication that was used, even if it happened in the way in which Baffert has said it did, which is that it was part of a medication that was used as a topical ointment for skin rash. You're still responsible for reading the label. And so, you know, I don't cut him any quarter in that regard. They were trying to do the right thing for the horse in terms of managing that skin rash, but you need to read the label. So, you know, that's where I come down on it. And I wanted those things that are, as some might perceive it, you know, in defense of him, but to me it's just a fair aspect of it, and the things that are critical of him. I thought I wanted all that in there so that people could have a hopefully well-rounded view. I don't think it's going to change any minds. I think his reputation is in many quarters, people have solidified their opinion, and that, you know, so be it. But I just wanted some well-rounded and well aspects of his situation to be on the record. And he underwent scrutiny to participate that other trainers who have had more frequent and or more recent medication violations have not had to undergo in order to participate in this, and certainly not publicly. I think the worst kept secret in racing is that there's a horse who's going to be favored in the turf sprint, juvenile turf sprint today, who's got a pending bad test Derby week. And that's, you know, that's not been something that's been bandied about much, but it's out. It's reality, even if they don't want to make it public yet. So, anyway.
No, fair. And I thought that was what the piece kind of reflected. And frankly, under all of the hubbub, has actually brought a nice lineup to these proceedings, that includes the two fillies in the distaff, as well as Medina Spirit, and the group of three in the juvenile. You got a juvenile? Do you want to offer a juvenile thought, Jay?
Well, I had a strong juvenile thought prior to Jack Christopher's scratch, because I did not like Jack Christopher. I thought he was a good gamble against trying to go two turns, and my thought on the race was that with him being on the rail and Corniche being outside and both of them having to be used because of their draws, that the pace had a chance to be really fast, and I had picked Oviatt Class, but it's a different race now, so I need to really drill down and look at it anew. I'm not as bullish on the race unfolding, you know, in the same manner as it was if Jack Christopher had been in there and having to go from the rail. By the way, I wanted to circle back to one thing you alluded to earlier. You opined that you thought Baffert's best chance was with Gamine, and from an odd standpoint, that's true, but I don't know that she's as good this year as she was last year. I think people are sort of basing their opinion of her based on her 2020 form, and this year she's gotten away with some soft paces in a couple of her races. She's tried to get out in a couple of her races, and she's still obviously very brilliant, but I don't know that she's quite the same as a year ago, and Bella Sophia is quality speed, and that it's not an attractive race with so few horses in there from a betting standpoint, but I don't think Gamine's necessarily a layup in here. I think Bella Sophia is going to make her life miserable early on, and I think Cece's going to sit a perfect trip.
I don't disagree, and I actually thought that Edgeway has even got a chance in here as the fourth.
But you can't use four out of five.
Understood. But go ahead. I think there's some appeal to her, and uh, I I can envision her having at least an impact in the pricing and the exotics. That was my way of trying to figure out.
So, fourth in the super? No, the super.
All right.
Anyway, go on. Let's move on.
Yeah. The Dirt Mile, one of yours, Jay, and final analysis in there.
Yeah, I just think Life is Good is exceptional. He was the best three-year-old in the country, I thought, earlier this year. You know, I saw him train a lot at Santa Anita before he was hurt and taken off the Triple Crown Trail. All indications from the way he's raced and trained since moving to Todd Pletcher's barn is that he's just continued that same brilliant kind of form that we saw earlier this year when Baffert had him. And I just, you know, it's not a creative play, but I just think he's far and away the most likely winner of the race. You know, Ginobili loves his track, and I think he'll run big in here. So, but it's not, from a gambling standpoint, it doesn't really get my heart racing very much, because I think he's, you know, I think Life is Good to win, and it'll be odds on.
Well, then let's get creative, because you've had assembled a enviable track record in Breeders' Cups as the week has unfolded, and you know, as you've handicapped and looked at things and seen horses on track. Pick some spots, Jay, that you're intrigued by over the course of the weekend.
So there's a couple today that I like, most notably in the juvenile turf. I thought McKinnon's last workout was phenomenal for a turf horse to work as well as he did on the dirt. He's got, I think, contending form, and I think because he's been racing in California, there's the perception that the horses out here are not as good as the ones coming in from the East Coast or especially Europe, but he obviously likes Del Mar's turf course, and I think he's continuing on a forward progression, and I think he offers solid value at eight, which is what John White made him. I think that's exactly where he'll be, and I'm going to gamble on him today.
Nice. His name came up yesterday, and it's such a good group. It's such a fun division.
And then, you know, moving on to a couple other races where, this isn't these aren't big prices, but I just think both Warlike Goddess and the Japanese mare Loves Only You tower over the Fillion mare Turf. And, if, you know, I can get a $30 exacta out of those two, which I don't think is impossible. I'm just going to hit that because I don't think the other ones are in their area code. I don't think Adaria is as good as she was last year. And Loves Only You has looked sensational. She's obviously got world-class form when you go back to see who she's run against around the world. And Warlike Goddess is, she's just gone from strength to strength this year. So I'm going to try and hit that. And then my other, opinions are that in the mile, Space Blues is the deserving favorite, and he should be able to see out a mile. When you go 7/8 overseas, a mile is certainly within range, I think, here. But I like the other Godolphin horse in here, Master of the Seas. I've had good success in the Breeders' Cup over the years, gambling on European horses who got the summer off and then were campaigned as though they were being pointed for the Breeders' Cup. In fact, 4 years ago, when it was here, both Talismanic and Wuhita were, very good to me. And they both had been campaigned that way. And this horse has been campaigned like the Breeders' Cup mile was what they were going to be pointing for all year long. He got the break. He's had two runs. I think his form is a little dirtied up from running on soft ground in his most recent start. He's obviously a firm ground kind of horse. He's got the rail, so he's going to save ground. There's going to be pace in the race. And I think he offers good value. On form, he may not stack up quite against Space Blues, but he's going to be four times the price. And so, to me, he's worth the gamble. So I like Master of the Seas in the mile.
I like it. I like it. And I'm glad you brought up Talismanic and Wajeda. That was... It's a pretty glorious Breeders' Cup for old JP.
Yeah, that was that and there was one at Churchill Downs, the year Thor Zecco won the sprint, where those have been my two best Breeders' Cups. So, but hopefully tomorrow will be, or this weekend will be equally rewarding, if not more.
I hope so. Let me also get, it doesn't have to be a betting opinion. What do you expect to happen in that distaff?
In what?
In the distaff.
Oh, in the distaff?
Yeah.
You know, I'm playing against Letruska. I admire everything they've done in terms of her campaign going all over the country and winning and running well everywhere. I just think there comes a point where eventually it can catch up to a horse, and I'm going to gamble that that happens tomorrow. Her work earlier in the week was poor. She has, to be fair, come back and galloped well both on Wednesday and Thursday mornings. She trained well those mornings, I thought. But she's going to be a short price. There should be some pace pressure here. I mean, there's a horse in the race has already beaten her, and that same horse has already come to Del Mar and won earlier this year. So
yep.
What's not to like about She Dares the Devil? And Malafat and Clairiere, to me, are up-and-coming three-year-olds who are good enough, I think, to run well against older horses. Malafat in particular, her last race was quite good, and I thought circumstances got her beat in the race before that. And Clairiere has trained tremendously out here. So I think Letruska, I'll tip my hat to her if she wins, because it'll be a heck of a campaign, but I'm going to gamble that the ambitious campaign that she's had this year gets to her the last quarter mile of the distaff, and I'm going to try and get, two of the other three into the exacta and, one of the other three home first to continue a sequential in my sequential wagers.
Excellent. And since we're on the Philly and the distaff side, I did see where you wrote about Echo Zulu midweek as well for the juvenile fillies.
Right. I mean, she's, I picked against her because I've just always thought that, horses with two-turn experience, if they're as good or potentially as good, have a little bit of an edge over a horse that's not gone two turns yet, especially if they're the brilliant kind, like a Jack Christopher or an Echo Zulu. And so I picked Echo Zulu second behind Hidden Connection. I really liked her win in the Pocahontas. She just looks like a big, long-striding filly who's got still more blue sky to her. And I liked the video that I saw of her most recent work at Churchill Downs, so I picked her to pull off the mild upset. And, certainly Juju's Map is a top contender as well. Those three to me lay over the other three in here. But I picked Hidden Connection to get the best of Echo Zulu.
Yeah, I picked her as well. Excellent. Well, and Jay, to round things out, you wrote a really nice piece about Del Mar and its second go round as a Breeders' Cup venue and how how well it's taken to being what feels like part of the rotation at this point. Keeneland and Del Mar, the most recent additions with Churchill and Santa Anita. I was heartsick to not be able to, literally heartsick to not be able to get out there this week and be there, especially after having come for Pacific Classic. I thought your piece was really nice. And of course the two functions, the Eddie Gregson Foundation that you're on the board that does such great work, and the Turf Riders as well with their function Wednesday. It feels like it's been a festive week out there.
Yeah, very much so. I think Del Mar, I think that the management of the Breeders' Cup has enjoyed their two experiences at Del Mar, so far to this day, this point as well. And I think there's definite sentiment to make Del Mar part of, a frequent part of the rotation in coming years. And yes, the functions on Wednesday, it was unfortunate they landed on the same night, but they both had great turnouts, I understand. I mean, I was at the Gregson dinner, which was terrific, but the Turf Riders dinner, I was told, was really good as well. And you know, I'm just sorry you couldn't be out here to accept your award, but hopefully they'll acknowledge you at next year's Turf Writers Dinner, and you can stand up and everybody can cheer for you and acknowledge you and just, you know, throw rose petals at your feet and all that you would want.
Not necessary, but I made the quip that if anybody had, you know, if odds were taken between Pacific Classic Week and Breeders' Cup Week of which one I would visit Del Mar this year, that there could only be one, it wouldn't have been necessarily Pacific Classic Week. But I'm glad. I'm glad at least I had that to use as a point of reference for the trip out there. So, Jay, best of luck today, tomorrow. Thanks for the outstanding coverage. We'll talk next week and do our usual recapping and hopefully celebrate wins and see what divisions had champions decided or if there's anything that's up for debate.
I'm sure there will be. So we'll hash that over the early part of next week, I'm sure.
Thoroughbred LA tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. 8 to 9 Pacific. 9 to 10 Pacific. It's been a long week. 9 to 10 Pacific. Bob Eich will be hosting. I'll be in the co-host chair as we preview the Saturday card and review what happened today.
Outstanding. Jay Pribman, everybody. DRF Pribman. Jay, looking forward to coverage here over the next 72 hours. Thank you.
Thank you. Be well, Steve.
I appreciate it. Jay Pribman, everybody. And that gets us halfway through this weekend preview at the races. And shockingly, we are right on time. Let's take our only break of the morning. We've got, I think, one or more of the clockers to talk to here. And Bobby Shoemaker's got three plays, I think, that he's zeroed in on. Hammer and Jimmy Ventura in a little bit for their annual Breeders' Cup run through. We'll see what Jimmy and Hammer have landed on. Marcus Hirsch, daily racing form, particularly with the international tinge and the turf races. Maybe we'll look at the turf pick four with Marcus. And Nick Tamaro, of course, to close it out. We'll get Nick's Saturday plays around 11:40 to noon. Stay with us. Sirius XM at the races. Breeders' Cup Friday. It's here. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorsed the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215 215- 501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution.